Hey gang, let's face it, you're probably listening to this show and all of your favorite shows on your phone. Are you tired of filling up your phone with all your favorite podcasts? You want to stream them like you do movies and music? Well, try Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is an app that allows you to stream over 5,000 of your favorite shows right to your smartphone or pad. Download it for free at Stitcher.com or find it in your app store. I use it, plus How Did I Get Here is on it with over 5,000 of your favorite podcasts and radio shows. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny. I am your host of this show, How Did I Get Here? And I want to talk to you about something pretty serious today. I want to talk to you about the most inspiring time I've ever had making music. And that was when I had a Tascam Porta 2 four-track cassette recorder. I first saw a four-track cassette recorder at my friend Mark Hallman's house in 1983. And it was a Yamaha, and it had the cassette deck on a separate mounted unit above a little four-track mixing board. And he showed me how to record multi-track on one of those. And once I could get my hands on one of those a couple years later, I really kind of, you know, started recording. I started writing. I started expressing myself. And that went on for a long time. I ended up getting a Porta 2 in like 1988. And in 1988, I wrote just a chunk of songs in my room by myself and developed a sound for a band, which I later put together and, for the most part, did well for me and put my name out there. And it was a popular band. It was called Panjandrum. We were from Houston. We were a funk band. I was doing stuff with an Alesis HR16 drum machine. I'm sorry to get all techie. Normally, I talk about what I do, but I want to talk about inspiration today, okay? I want to talk about four tracks. So I made this band sound, on my own, initialized it, and then we rounded it out with the actual band. And then later on a Tascam Porta 2, I recorded a bunch of songs and just kind of a sound for a band I wanted to have that ended up being my band, Mr. Rocket Baby. That was fantastic. Then through the 90s, I went crazy with four-tracking. I learned how to record. I learned how to make my recordings sound better. I liked my four-track recordings more than any studio recording I made in the 90s. Until I met Mike McCarthy. Then he turned me on to some stuff. I know that this is getting long-winded, but stick with me. You're going to like this. So through the 90s, I did so much stuff with my Tascam Porta 2. My friend AJ Vallejo and I would get together and spend an entire day writing like two songs in a day and recording them on this Tascam Porta 2. And I would get into scenes where I would have a lot of ideas for a song, sonic ideas, different textures. So I started learning how to bounce tracks and having all these tracks. So I would end up with like 14 track songs on my four track because I'd bounce them down so much. They'd be kind of noisy and incredibly lo-fi. But if you listen to this show and you listen to me talk, you know that that's my, I love lo-fi. And it's from that time doing my stuff on four track and getting the inspiration of being alone and just all this discovery that you're doing as you're learning how to record. My friend Darren Murphy is an amazing four track guy. My friend David Garza is hands down one of the best four track guys I've ever met. So my guest today is Danny Malone. He's been on the show before. We did a live conversation at Hotel Vegas in 2012. That was 3 years ago. We had a great conversation. We were doing a residency on Sunday nights at Hotel Vegas at that point, and I was opening for him, and we ended up doing a live one there. It was fantastic, and Danny has put out a record called Speed Dreamer, which he made on a four-track cassette with one Shure 58 mic. Now, Danny is an amazing producer. He's an amazing songwriter. He's an amazing singer. He's an amazing musician. Now, his four-track skills, he is a ninja, man. This guy is in a black belt. He's a black belt four tracker, and this record, Speed Dreamer, has all of that inspiration caught on these recordings, and all of that, just when you're alone and you're being weird, and it's all in there, and it's so beautiful. Danny and I have a fantastic conversation about four tracking and how inspiring it actually is, and the medium itself is so beautiful. It's so noisy and it's so weird, but it's so great. Danny's music works great on it. He sounds amazing on four track. He's got a lot of stuff going on. He's got a bunch of albums. You can find them all out there. Look, go to his Facebook or his Twitter, or go to his Bandcamp or his iTunes or his Spotify. Find them all. Speed Dreamer, that's the four-track one, the latest one. He's fantastic. He's a Black Fret grant winner, so he got $10,000 that will be unlocked. Maybe he'll buy $10,000 worth of cassette tapes and make 1,000 four-track albums. All right. I really enjoyed talking to Danny. We get along really well, and it's always an entertaining conversation. Please enjoy my conversation with my friend, Danny Malone. Let's get down.
Cross.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it has a passcode on it and the screen breaks, they can do nothing.
I've been thinking about switching to an iPhone. I have a Galaxy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're good. I like it. It's pretty, you know? It's like the layout of it is just easy to use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you a question. What part of town do you live in?
I live at on the east side, or East Cesar Chavez.
Is that where you were having those barn shows?
Yes. Special Magic Barn Fantastic.
Are you going to do any of those again?
Maybe sometime in the future, but I kind of I renovated my place, and I put a kitchen in, and before it was just like a big open warehouse, just like one big room.
Yeah.
And ripe for just people piling in there and
right.
And a show happening on one side and people just trashing the other side of it. But now it's more of like a loft, kind of as if it was a New York loft.
Yeah.
But it's in a barn in the backyard of a house. So it's not really set up for a show anymore. And plus, I just don't really want people to trash my place.
Yeah.
Anymore. I got kind of sick of it.
I could see that being like magical, like once, and then starting to be a little annoying twice, and then by the third time you're like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I had probably 10 shows there. Well, you know.
Oh, you did?
Over a span of year and a half or two, maybe.
Wow. There were a couple I wanted to go to, but I play almost every weekend. So
do you?
Yeah.
Where you play?
I play in this band Skyrocket. I have for a long time.
Right. I know. But where y'all do a residency?
No, we play a lot of, like, tonight we're doing a Deb Ball. Yeah.
Debutante.
Yeah.
Ball.
It's my least favorite demographic of people. Like, if I have any prejudice, it's like young, rich, white people.
Right.
I'm scared of them.
Oh, God. They're not.
Because they can kill you and get off.
They're not like us. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not them.
Exactly.
We're not them. Mm-mm.
No. So, what was the idea of having those shows in your barn? Like, was that like to, A, do something different? B, like, I don't want to go anywhere.
yeah, I'd put them in the opposite order, but yeah, B then A. Let's see. The first one that happened, my friend John Elliott, who's do you know John Elliott? He's a singer songwriter from L.A. He had quite a bit of notoriety about 5 years ago. I think he had a song in Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
That show. He had like two songs in that show, and one was like the epic season finale, last song of the season, and like romantic, sad part of the show, like tearjerker. And he got a lot, you know, he kind of blew up after that for a little while. But anyways, he's a friend of mine, and he was coming through town, and he asked me if we could book a show like a month before he's coming in town, and I asked around, and I tried to put something together, but didn't have something, and he was coming into town at this point, like, in 10 days or something. I was like, you know what? My place is just a big open room, and I just have a bed in one corner of it, and why don't I just, like, sort of cover that up? And my friend had a portable stage that he would put together to throw shows at like Old Settlers Music Festival and Kerrville and stuff. He would build a stage and have like overnight shows that weren't official shows. Like it would be in the camping areas of the festivals.
Right.
And I just knew of him that he had the stage, and I was like, will you put the stage in my place and we could throw a show there? For me and John. And I think I had John and I had both been through a breakup at the time. John had he and his fiance had called off a wedding like right recently before he was coming to town, and I had been through a rough breakup, and we were both kind of just like chumming it out on the phone and just being like, we got to do something. So we just put that together, and it was a hit. You know, like 200 people showed up, and people just sprawled out in the backyard and out on the street, and my neighbors were really cool, and I talked to them all beforehand, and they were like, sure, and they ended up showing up and getting drunk, and it was
that's awesome.
Just totally successful, you know.
Yeah.
Just the mood of it was awesome, just friendly, and everybody was so nice, and all the fan base was just mingled and got together.
Yeah, I bet it had a vibe. Like, there's a thing that happens. I don't know what age it is, but at some point you don't play anyone's backyard anymore.
Right, right.
And there was always something so fucking cool about that.
Right. It was like high school.
Yeah,
you know, when there's like this show, you know, that is like
in someone's house. Yeah,
you have friends in high school, and everyone's like into your band because you're the only band in the school, and nobody even cares how good you are. You know, you're just like, there's a show this weekend at my friend's house, and all the girls are gonna be there.
Yeah.
So, it totally had that vibe, like bringing back that sort of high school vibe of just like, there's a show and let's go hang out. There's no pretense.
You're not selling liquor for a bar, which isn't bad.
Right.
But there is, all of a sudden, there's like a little more magic that comes when you're not doing that.
Oh, man. It ended up being like, then I basically didn't play shows at a club for the next 2 years because it was just such a good vibe. I was like, I'm just going to do this for a while. Play a show every month or two.
Yeah. And are you doing shows? Are you playing by yourself? Are you doing a band?
I do both, yeah. Okay. But I finally, it's taken 7 years, but I finally have a band that I'm happy with. And that is all my friends. Like, they're all my best friends.
Yeah.
And they all rock.
I was hanging out last night with a huge fan of yours when I got the text that you were going to be able to come today at noon.
My mom? Like, was it my mom?
It was your mom. I was having dinner with your mom.
Man, yeah.
Your mom actually wrote me after the last podcast.
She did?
Yeah. It's on the website.
What did she say? It's on the website?
Yeah, that she was real proud of you and that she really enjoyed our conversation.
Really?
And I remember the whole time you were like, I hope my mom doesn't
I know.
Listen
that
to
was
this.
Quite revealing. I don't know what. You tapped into something.
Well, when I got the comment and she had written it, it was like, hi, I'm Danny Malone's mom. And like my jaw dropped. I was like, oh, no. But it was a great, very sweet email. I actually just read it yesterday.
Again. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's cool. That's neat of her.
Yeah. Okay. So it was Donnie Wynn.
Donnie Wynn.
Yeah.
What
you know
about
what I'm
him?
Talking about?
Yeah, I know.
Drummer. I was with him last night. I got the text. Okay. I said, oh, cool. Danny Malone can do my podcast. So he's like, guy's a fucking genius.
Really?
He said Donnie's you had awesome. Something like one of those weird metaphors he uses, like, you know, you've got it all over you or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's bad about it or something.
Yeah.
He's
got this.
He's sort of got this colloquial, like, southern, halfway black kind of vernacular.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that weird Louisiana swamp man thing.
Right, right, yeah. It's like Creole, yeah.
All right, you did your album, Butterflies. which
butterflies.
Oh, sorry, balloon. Sorry, dude. What is wrong with me?
You're nothing. Not much.
There's a lot wrong with me.
No, come on.
There's a lot of stuff I'm remembering. I don't have notes, even though I did just look at it. This is a striking photo. Did Holly Bronco take that photo?
No, nope. My friend Brad Linton, my best friend grown up since I was 6 years old. He lives in Dallas. He took that photo.
Yeah, it's a great photo.
Thanks. Holly did that art for Speed Dreamer.
Okay. Yeah. The balloon you did in Europe, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, and those were songs that you did with House of Songs and...
They weren't songs from House of Songs, actually, per se. Actually, one of them I wrote during a House of Songs retreat or whatever, which was in Austin.
Right.
The second one that I did, yeah, it was in Austin. But I ended up just writing the song, even though I was paired with somebody. I was paired with somebody who I then got with, and, you know, we have 3 hours to write a song. And right. I was like, okay, let's do this. How do you write? And she was like, oh, well, I actually don't write songs. I just, I have friends that write the lyrics, and sometimes I put it to my own melodies. But I'm just like a performer, basically. I was like, oh, okay. So then I just sort of sat there and wrote a song in front of her, and she was like, wow, that was great. And so that song's on Balloon's called Fly in the Window.
But then you went there through their program? Did you?
Well, so originally I went there to write songs for this workshop, this 5-day songwriter retreat thing where we went to this magic castle.
Right.
In rural Denmark, which is this magical place, like literally magical. It is known to be, you know, this aligned with the stars in this alchemical way that that produces just magical feelings. It sort of makes you the best version of yourself in a way. Yeah. Like after a couple of days there, you're just like, I feel great and just like open and alive, and I feel who I am. So and so when I was, and when it came to time to make my second album, I knew it was going to be called Balloons for some reason, and I asked that castle, because I got a rapport with them while I was there, I just asked the castle if I could come and stay there for 6 weeks, 2 months to record an album, and they said sure. I guess who is good promo for them or something, and or a good, you know, good story for them.
Yeah.
To have an artist come and make an entire album there. And so it was awesome. Me and a producer went over there.
What, and so on that one, you did all of the instruments? Did you have other people? You did play everything.
I played everything. Played everything on everything I've put out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of collaborations? Because you didn't sound like you did when you were talking about writing with that lady. Do people like, hey, man, I want to write a song with Danny Malone. Do you go like, no, thanks, man?
Well, I might say, sure, yeah, cool. Yeah, you know, hit
the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. But
tweet at me, bro.
Right. but no, I don't know how to collaborate. Like, it's just never... It's never clicked.
When we did those shows together, I don't know if I ever asked you, but I thought about asking you, and then I remember watching you and going like, this guy doesn't do that.
Yeah, I just... Like, you really...
I just should cover one of his songs.
Well, thank you.
There was a guy once that I did ask. I told... I saw him in a bar in L.A., and I said, hey, I just want you to know, I think you're an amazing songwriter, and I'm actually here on a songwriting trip, and I'd love to... write a song with you. And I named a song that he really liked, and he was like, I don't really like doing that stuff, and why don't you just cover that song?
Yeah. That's a little cocky.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense. I was like, hey, you're right. You know, okay. Not everybody does that.
I never would suggest somebody cover my song. Never.
Never?
No. Well, just because...
Well, that was my thought when I was watching you play, and I'd think like, man, I want to write a song with that guy, and a couple of songs would go by, and I'd be like, that guy doesn't write with people.
What made that sort of come to mind like that?
There's just something you get from people that there's a vision. Yeah. Like, you've got a vision of what you're doing, and it's not about other people coming in and, hey, let's make this feeling come out together.
I see.
Collaborate with words. It's you're like, hey, this is my song. Like, do you want to watch me poop?
Yeah.
Or what?
Right. It's like a very personal thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was getting.
It's my own stamp, I guess, or yeah. something. I see. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's good to know.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's a magical thing to do. It, I know a lot of guys like that. Bob's kind of like that, right?
Right, right.
He's not a big collaborator guy.
Right. Actually, though, he, I've asked him to just jam because me and Bob are homies and and you know he's got a funny personality that it's like I feel like he wants to hang out but doesn't know how to like ask people or something.
Yeah. You
know
what I get mean? That too
because he's like so work oriented, just like work yeah. ethic is like Stephen King or something. It's like out of the charts. And so I just wanted to just like hang out, and he doesn't. I feel like he just. Thinks work is the only way to hang out or something. So.
Right.
But finally, I was kind of touched that he asked me to help him do this song for KUTX that they're doing something. I don't really know the details. He didn't really either. He just knows he's doing it. They're doing something with psychedelic music. They're having, I guess, Austin artists cover psychedelic songs.
Yeah.
And so he said he's, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but he's going to do a Flaming Lips song.
Oh, cool.
That song, Do You Realize?
Yeah.
So so you don't have to do it necessarily in a psychedelic style. You just do it in whatever style you want. And
right.
So he asked me to produce it. So he's going to sing it.
I think that's a great, you are a great producer.
Thank you. I think so too.
Yeah, and
I've produced some, but not very much, but I'd like to do it more.
Well, you produced Balloons.
Right.
But you were working with somebody I remember one time we had lunch and you were doing something with someone.
Was I producing something?
I think, or you were about to, or you just had, or something like that.
I can't remember. Maybe I was... There's a band called The Window Theater that I did some stuff with. Maybe it was something like that. Maybe, I don't know. They're not a band anymore. They do other stuff. They kind of hung that up. But, it could have been any number of things.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, you know, when you see you play, if I see you play by yourself, you have that sort of, like, ability to... finger pick and play songs in a great execution solo style that would make someone think that you're part of a folk world. Do you see your? Because to me, you're more like a weird pop guy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I hate the fact.
I think I am too. We're real different, but I feel like that's the kind of guys that
totally.
We both are. We're like weird pop guys.
Yeah, and I totally see that with
like
you.
Beatles without the Skechers.
Right, exactly. That's an inside joke that no one's going to get unless they saw the back of that magazine cover.
Ringo is advertising Skechers because they're comfortable.
Ringo,
and he likes to
that.
Be in comfortable shoes when he's playing the drums.
When
go ahead,
Ringo,
sorry.
When Ringo downloads this podcast, he will chuckle to himself.
Yeah.
And what was I saying? Pop guy. Just the fact that, you know, like for you and me, I feel like it's a stigma to me that like people just see a dude playing an acoustic guitar, and then just immediately lump them into like, oh, that's Paul Simon or Taylor something.
Yeah.
It's like, and really, I just play acoustic guitar at shows because I'm just like a weirdo recluse who, you know, just like doesn't like to play out or doesn't like to hang out with people that much. And so that's just the way I play shows.
But you mentioned like Old Settlers. Do you go do those kind of shows? Can you run in those circles?
I can. Yeah, I can. Just because I've made really good friends out there and stuff.
Okay.
But I think there's something about people out there, like that sort of hippie folk crowd, they've recognized something different with me, at least in Austin.
And, right.
And that they know that I'm not like a folk act or something. So
right.
Somehow they lump me in with, they don't lump me in with anything. They just know that like they set me apart from any sort of folk bluegrass kind of stuff going on. It's
right.
Like, okay, now a break, and now it's Danny's turn, and everybody is ready for a different kind of mood or something.
Yeah.
So there's different crowds that have given me enough time a day or paid attention enough to realize that I'm not just an acoustic guitar playing schlump.
Right, right. There's something weird about that, because I think that guys that sit around and record on their own and have rooms like this, while we, out of necessity, go out and do those shows, we just never want to be known as an acoustic guy.
I know. You know what I mean? It's so annoying.
There's nothing wrong with it. There's it's just nothing, not what I want to be.
Exactly. It's, yeah. And it's not what I am. And it's not what I want people to have the impression that I am. But there's no really avoiding it.
No.
You just have to be... Well, that's why I try to... I really try to give a different image or imagery with my branding, you know?
Right, right.
So I think I've done pretty well with that. I think if somebody looked at any of my work... any of my visual art stuff associated with me, they wouldn't be like, oh, here's a Jack Johnson guy or whatever.
Right, right, exactly. Like,
what the hell, you know, is this electronic music? Is this, yeah, like, I don't know what this is. Yeah.
Do you think that's a help or a hindrance? Like, do you think, like, even a guy, not to use him as an example, but he's a guy that we both know and people that are listening might know who he is. Bob Schneider can walk in those circles, but isn't, like, he can play the Kerrville Folk Festival or whatever, but he's not a Kerrville guy.
Well,
and then he can play, like, rock songs and use a Jazzmaster, but he's not necessarily an indie rock guy.
I think that's one of the I think that is the strength of Bob.
And that's what I like in an artist. But I feel like people, in general... They need something pretty neatly put together.
Well, the difference is I can't play that many shows. Like, I can't play a show every night over and over, especially in such close proximity like Bob does. And Bob's strength is that his shows are just fucking awesome. They're parties, you know? They're just like, the show starts and it's going to be an hour and a half, almost 2 hours of any kind of music that you could think of, any right. style of music that you could think of. He's going to go through everything, like Latin, like reggae, like hip hop, and then, you know, folk music, pop music. It's just like, it's a party band, you know, that he has start to finish. And I think that's what his strength is, and that's why he can play shows every night constantly and to like a lot of the same crowds even over, like he played so much even in Austin and around Austin because people go there because it's a party. Yeah. And it's not, whereas me, if it was my show, it's the people, they'd blow their head off after
that's
a few shows.
That's the other shows, thing about weird pop guys is that you can't go every day.
You can't go every day. And so it's too personal and it's too like the same. I focus on such a specific mood
right.
with my music yeah. that I feel like no one's doing this mood. I'm trying to master this one mood that is only mine.
Yeah.
And that mood is not something that you can linger on for too long, you know?
Yeah. Do you know that band East Cameron Folklore?
Oh, I've heard of them,
are you playing the Art City Festival tomorrow? Or not tomorrow, on Saturday?
I am, okay. On Saturday. Yeah.
This will come out afterwards, but I think they're playing Saturday too, but they're pretty intense. They got really serious music, and they don't believe in writing songs about girls that bum you out or anything.
Yeah.
And I felt really self-conscious through the whole thing, like while I was talking to him, because I was like, man, if this guy heard one of my tunes, he would just fucking laugh at me.
Wait, how do you know they hadn't heard one of them?
Oh, I don't know. Mm. I assume that people... Don't you assume, A, that people hate you if they know you, and then B, that they, like, my natural assumption is that everybody hates me. And my first thought yesterday when Amber texted, I was like, hey.
My first thought is that everyone hates you, too.
Danny's not here yet. She was like, I don't know where he is. I was like, he fucking hates me.
No.
I know, but that was my first thought.
Oh, my God.
That was, I didn't tell her, but that was my first thought.
When I woke up at 5 p.m. was that everyone hated me for what I had just done. So we're both sitting there thinking everyone right. hates us. And if we had just known, we could have hung out.
Well, my other thing, too, is that I believe that nobody knows who I am either.
Well,
even if they do, you know what I mean? It's weird to think that people do. Like, I feel like I'd walk differently if I thought people knew who I was.
Right, right.
Like, I'd carry my... I wouldn't slump down so much. I'd have a little better posture and, like...
Really? I actually...
Yes, people know who I am. Hello, I'm Johnny.
I would go... When... After...
I would dress better.
After a few times of being recognized out in public, I've actually... I've gone the opposite way because I don't know how to really handle that. Like, yeah. I get really nervous, and I've even heard people think that I'm a jerk or something, but really I was just like terrified of that person saying hello to me and even, you know, saying they love my music and thank you for what I've done. And yeah. Really, I'm just having a fucking panic attack inside.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I've gone the other way. I do slump down and try to just keep to myself and keep any interactions really short.
That's good. I think I don't know. But look, let's talk about this. And when I was 14 years old, there's this guy, Mark Hallman. He's a producer here in town. He was friends with my mom and subsequently friends with me. And he would turn me on to cool stuff. And so I wrote my first song, and we were visiting them here in Austin. And it was 1983. And I was like, yeah, you know, so I wrote this song.
When you were 14.
Yeah. I was like, hey, he's like, oh, man, that's cool. I played it for him. And then he was like, let's go into my music room. We go into his music room, and he has this cassette player that has a board in front of it. And I'm like, what's that? He's like, this is a 4-track cassette thing. And I'm like, what? So from then on, then I saw a guy put a drum machine down, and then he played a bass part, and then he goes, okay, play your guitar over this. And it was a band, but it was on this certain machine.
Yeah.
And then I got a machine a couple years later. And then I recorded on 4-track cassette till I moved to 8-track cassette in like 1996.
Yeah.
But I still used the 4-track too for the drums for some reason.
Yeah.
So what 4-track cassette machine did you use for Speed Dreamer?
I used a Tascam 424.
Which has the different channels?
Yes. It's 4-track.
Okay, 4 separate tracks. It's not like the Porta one that has just the 2 channels, but it has the 4 tracks.
It has 4 tracks. Okay. What is the port? It has 2 channels. What is that?
That's just one that's like really low budge.
Okay. No, this one is, I mean, Jesus, I don't know how much it costs. I bought one when I was 14 myself, yeah. Or 15. No, I was 14. I'd been playing guitar for a year, and I think I'd saved up money, and my parents even doubled down on it. Like, they're like, all right. And so I bought it for like $200 and, or maybe $300 back in 96. So today it's pretty cheap, but I just love the way they sound.
Yeah.
And it's just 4 tracks, and you can bounce tracks, you know, so you record tracks, something on first track, second track, and third track, and you bounce all those 3 to the 4th track.
Yeah.
But then that has to be the right mix, because then it's locked in forever. That's the 4th track. The 4th track is going to have those 3 tracks.
Yeah.
That mix on it. That's it. So you have to get it right. So at least you have a few tries to get it right, and then you have the first 3 tracks open again.
There's no auto-tune.
No auto-tune.
There's no speed... Or there's no, you know, what's it called? Quantitizing. There's no nothing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah.
There's no moving anything. You gotta make it through it.
Yeah.
You got a couple out-of-tune guitars in there that I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, Danny, how fucking important this is to me, because there was a point in the 90s where, like, I was doing 4-track stuff. My friend Darren had moved here. David Garza was doing a bunch of 4-track stuff. Scalzo from Fastball. In fact, the very first version of The Way I Heard, of the song The Way that I heard, was the 4-track version. And when I heard the record version, I was like, they ruined it.
Right.
And it's so it got to a point in the 90s where, like, I started using my 4-track demos as my demos, because when I'd go to a studio, I just felt like everything was so hi-fi, it was horrible. And I needed that compressed tape sound.
Yeah, that constraint, you know?
Yeah.
Because then if you just have endless choices, then you start fucking going crazy. There's just like, when's the song over? Because you can just keep adding stuff and keep taking stuff away. And when I recorded Speed Dreamer, it was like, that was it. That was the mix. I had no choice. I just put the faders at zero and that was the fucking song.
You got to commit. If you want to use an effect, you got to use it going into the, there's a level of commitment and there's a level when you bounce everything down, then that bass part and that drum part, there's nothing you can ever, there's a level of commitment which adds this level of excitement to the recording.
Yeah.
And when you get through a whole take of it, however long the song is, you did it right.
Yeah.
And there's a level of excitement doing that.
It's an emotion. I think emotion is captured that way.
Yes.
Because you can feel that someone, because you can feel that commit. You have to feel that someone just went through something to be like, okay, that's what it is. And that's what I'm going to work over and move on. And even to the point of, if you use a drum machine, say, which is essentially turns into a click track or something, it turns into a tempo meter. Even that, every time that you play the tape or record over that, there's going to be time fluctuations because of the wah or whatever they call it on the tape speed. It's going to change every time. That's why you can't match it up to video. I actually tried to do a song where I recorded it on the 4-track and somebody did a video of it, but then they couldn't link up the video because of the timing of it was all over the place. And so there's something emotional about that in a way, because it's just you alone with headphones on, following what you've all done, but then what you've done changes, which also is like mirrors how your emotions sort of and your memory sort of change.
Yeah.
They get distorted in ways. I don't know what I'm talking about, but something
No,
happens.
I know. I mean, there's something really... I mean, did you... Why did you... And you only used one mic, Shure 58, right?
Yeah, that's all I had. Yeah.
That's awesome. The best. Did you use effects? Did you use your pedals?
Yeah. Yeah, I ran it through my pedal board, which is like 4 or 5 pedals. Including a tuner, so that didn't count. and then I had just a shitty PA head, you know, like a practice amp or practice for practice bass, 8-channel PA head, which had just terrible reverb on it and some extra EQs, you know, the like 10-band EQ that you can use for the mains and the monitors. And so I had that, and I guess it has reverb on it, or it has delay on it, or it has, what's the other effect? Oh, maybe like, does it have flanger on those things?
Oh, that
Has like 4 clicks of reverb and 4 clicks of delay, and you have like, different options. I can't remember what the third one is. There's a third effect that's on those PAs. I forget. But I had those options as well.
Yeah. So what was your, what in the hell was your, like, what made you decide to do that now in 2014 when you did it?
We live
in a different world.
Yeah. Right. I know. I could have been on Pro Tools. I could have fucking
But I'll tell you what, man, there's,
version.
I don't know if it's my nostalgic mind or whatever it is that just the second that it started, when I was listening to it a couple of days ago,
you hear that,
I was just like, oh God, why don't things sound like this anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that I still make, I mean, when I record and I record on here, it sounds, it has that weird mid-range thing that 4-track does, because that's just what I do.
Yeah. What are you recording on?
That thing.
But generally for your stuff, are you recording on this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Portis Studios.
Yeah.
What is it? Yeah.
And I have another one that's 16, but it's over at my rehearsal place that I can use to do drums and stuff.
You don't do Pro Tools or Logic or anything?
No.
But this has a program that locks that sort of...
Yeah, but I still just use it like a tape machine.
I see.
I mean, there's some stuff that I can't... I mean, okay, look, the automatic going back to zero, not having to wait, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if your 4-track even had the return to zero thing, but when you have to sit there and watch it, it goes past zero and you're 940 or something. Right. Fuck. Gotta fast forward to zero.
It had that. It had to go back to zero, but you have to wait for it to rewind all the whole way.
Yeah.
And sometimes you forget that zero was 3 songs ago.
Yeah. I like that about it. But I still use guitar pedals for effects. I still do that stuff.
That was the only compression I had, was a compressor pedal for my guitar.
Yeah.
And then the natural compression that happens.
Yeah.
Which is just awesome sounding. And just like, even when it clips on a cassette tape, it just sounds good for some reason, you know?
That was my hardest thing when I switched to a digital format, was like, you know, it took me a couple of months.
Clipping's
of like
not an option.
Engineers and stuff looking at me like, going like, dude, what the fuck? Everything is like completely pegged.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's how you do it, right?
No, right.
Not here.
Not anymore.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we have to simulate that somehow if you want that effect.
Yeah, no thanks.
I know.
I mean, it's there, but so were you just tired of all that stuff and you were like, I'm just... Were you setting out to make a record like this, or were you just recording on it?
I was just recording because my roommate, the guy in the front house, I live in the backyard in the barn. And so my housemate in the front house happened to have the 424, the four track, and he just lent it to me because I noticed he had it, and I was like, dang, oh, do you use that thing very often? He was like, I've used it a little bit, but man, if you want to borrow it, go ahead. And I've had it ever since for the last 2 years in my place. What was I saying? So when the story of it is kind of convoluted, but when I came back from Europe after recording Balloons, shit kind of fell apart, where the label I was working with was going to have a lot of money put into it and was paying the producer a good amount of money, and I was all down with it because it was like a big project, and my buddy Matt Smith was the producer. We co-produced it, and he just deserved the money because it just, I think he's brilliant. And when it got down to it, but they were supposed to get the money before he went, and then while we were there, supposed to get it, and then when we got back, we're supposed to get it, but then it ended up, the money kind of fell through, and I don't really know what happened. I don't want to talk too much shit about with the people I was working with, but
just... It's obviously a bad position to be left in.
Yeah, confusion just happened, and everybody was at a loss of what to do, and everybody kind of, everybody lost something out of the deal, like, not just me. They didn't just fuck me over.
Right,
it was something went down with them that was unavoidable, I'm sure, and so I feel, you know, I feel bad for them. I have compassion for that situation, but the outcome of that was that... Because Matt came to Europe, he came back with no money and then no way to make money because he hadn't been booking any other bands because he had just been totally focused. And then he ended up having to move out of his place. He had got evicted from where he was living.
Oh.
And then he had no place to even set up his studio to mix the record. And then so what happened was a year went by before we could even mix the record. But from tracking the record in Europe, where I did all the tracking,
right,
11 songs, and that was the model that I kept it to, was we're only going to track in the castle, and we're going to stick to that model no matter what. We're not going to come home and redo stuff. And so a fucking year went by before I could even mix the record. So I was losing my mind. I hadn't even heard what we tracked in a year. And then it was just so, like, it took the breath out of me, you know, it just swept my legs out from under me, that the deal kind of fell through, and all of a sudden it wasn't going to have all this money behind it. And the story wasn't going to get out there about this magical thing that happened with recording Balloons. And so it was within that year that I, at near the end of that year, I was like, I got to do something. And so when he lent me that four track, I was just starting to record some demos. You know, I thought, or just, I not even demos. I was just
writing
like,
some songs.
I was just playing some songs. Yeah, writing some songs and doing something, because I hadn't seen another person in 2 months and I needed something to do.
Yeah.
But then by the end of the first song, Speed Dreamer was the first song I recorded on there, which is the first, is the title track and the first song. I was like, this sounds, I fucking ran this $50 bass direct into the thing and played it to a drum machine. And even still at the end of it, I was like, this sounds dope, man. Like, what the hell? And so I tried another song And that sounded dope. And I was like, "What's? I guess I'm making an album here, you know? Yeah. I guess these aren't demos or these aren't just me fucking around. These are good songs."
Yeah.
And so,
I wonder if that's the thing too about those four track things, because nobody when they're doing that thinks I'm making this record. Like Elliott Smith didn't think that when he was
right or
in
Iron
his room.
And Wine.
Yeah,
I know he no didn't one, think of that. Yeah,
yeah.
I know he turned those as in maybe, as demos, and they were like, "Let's just put this out as the record. It's great."
Yeah, maybe the guy from Brian Jonestown Massacre thought like he was going to win a Grammy for his. He seems like the kind of guy that was doing that, but otherwise, you don't think anyone's going to hear him. So you really
right. Oh, that's what, yeah, totally. It's really personal.
They're honest, personal, and weird.
Right. And it's your first, it's the first
yes.
chance at the song. Yeah. You know, it's the first emotional, just like, boom, that's the
yeah.
that's what happened. And then you don't overthink it and redo that part until you're trying to, like, recreate an emotion that happened naturally the first
right.
time. So, yeah, you can't possibly recreate that initial emotion that happened
right.
when you recorded that part that had never been written before you recorded it.
Yeah.
Know?
So are you like, this isn't like you're not treating this like a mixtape, like a rapper would treat a mixtape, like, "Oh, I'm just throwing this out here while I work on my next balloons." Or is this like a,
I kind of am actually doing you? That.
Okay.
Yeah, what am I gonna do?
I think the words you're looking for are, "What you talking about, Willis?"
Oh man, I'm moving up, what up? I don't know. I'm not like I'm not pouring my life into promoting the hell out of it.
Okay.
I'm not throwing down money on PR or anything. Like,
okay.
I'm just putting it out because. Because it is a personal thing, I kind of feel like just putting it out and just being like, it's there if people look for me. I feel like that resembles the way I recorded it in a way, you know? It's like, it's a personal thing, and
right.
if people want
to get
personal with me, they'll find it, you know?
I suggest they find it.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So then what do you... What's the next? What's
going after
Danny
this?
Malone? Yeah. Well, you won the Black Fret.
Use your words.
So you have that. You have access to unlocking funds as
yeah.
you do
which
things.
Which is just, I cannot believe that happened. Oh my God.
I think that's a great company. Those guys are good guys. I've had them in
such good guys.
A couple times.
Have you?
And they invite me to all their stuff, which is really nice.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how they have the time to remember who to call and remember.
You know what? That's interesting. Maybe because they're good guys.
They're good guys.
Like, I don't want to go, like, ass kissy, but they are. It's a good.
Yeah, I don't think
it's a good thing.
It's possible to even ass kiss with them. They're just, like, deserve it.
Here's something interesting. I saw this thing on Facebook the other day that Andy Langer had written that. that he thought it was weird that guys with like deals and stuff get those things. But then a lot of people had written underneath like, "Hey, when I had a record deal, that's when I really needed those $10,000 because your label doesn't really," you know what I mean? I don't think that it's.
Wait, start that over.
Like there are guys that have deals.
Yeah.
Like a Max Frost is a nominee. And he's got a major label record deal.
Right.
And then some people were sort of complaining from the outside saying that.
Right,
like,
that he's double and he's got a double and up.
Not even so much doubling up, but more like a Black Fret. Like, just like, are they helping local guys? Or are they just like helping anyone who's, you know what I mean?
Like riding coattails kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. A coattail riding situation.
Yeah.
I don't think so either.
Because it's just, it happens organically the way people, the way the members vote, you know?
Right.
So
right.
it's just maybe that they've heard of these people.
Yeah.
And that's
not
their
fault. And
that's
the thing is that I thought it was good because it's like, if I was going to put my money behind someone, I would like someone that's kind of proven a little bit that they're going to be able to have some traction.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why it's organic, the voting process of the committee members. I mean, even the founders of it, Matt Ott and Colin Kendrick, they just have one vote each, you know, the 100-something-some-odd members.
Yeah.
It's not like because they're the founders of it, they don't have any strings to pull. They're just two guys in the committee. They have one vote each, just like everyone else.
Right.
And so it's just organic. And say Max Frost wins a grant, it it's not his fault that he's done all this work to get all the, to get notoriety
exactly.
and get known.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
So the people who want to bitch and moan about not getting a grant, I mean, just fucking work harder.
Well, that's also, yeah, I don't think that they would give it to people that aren't, because it seems like everyone on their list are all people that are out there, like, really working
yeah.
hard.
Yeah. And that's not a byproduct of any sort of hipsterism or like
no
trendy thing. It's just because they're working hard enough to get noticed, and
right.
and that translates to, you know, they're going to continue working.
Right. And I think that sometimes people think that if your name is out there a lot, then you have a lot of money. That's a weird perception.
Oh,
and that
really?
You don't need it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you're right. Or that,
and,
yeah. Or that's like,
and there's just not a lot of money being made.
No.
I mean, I'm sure there are bands like anybody, someone you see, they're not really doing
totally
as well as you might
Spoon.
Think they are funny. Yeah.
I mean, I see Jimeno. I've seen him at HEB, like, shopping, you know, for groceries. Like, like, that's, you know.
Celebrities, they're just like us.
Right. Like, I mean, it's.
That's funny. I just saw him the other day at the like, the concession counter of the Paramount.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
That dude is everywhere. What's up with that?
Doesn't he work? So what is your plan then for the next record?
Yeah.
He does work a lot.
He does.
Yeah. He's a great guy, too, by the way.
He sort of has a look that maybe he's got some devils, doppelgangers. He's got a mimicable
yep.
look. What did I just say? Mimicable?
I think that's an actual word. If it's not, we should contact Webster as soon as this is
totally,
over.
Totally.
Mimicable is a thing.
Scrabble. Call Scrabble.
Call Scrabble.
Scrabble.com.
So are you going to record new album? Do you have new songs?
I do have new songs. I'm always writing, and I'm always fucking... It's really frustrating. Kind of. I'm 2 years
I'm
ahead.
I'm always writing, and I'm always fucking. I'm Danny
Did
Malone.
Did I just say that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. In the transcript of this thing,
that's
going to look
slogan.
Bad. Please put an ellipsis.
I'm always writing, and I'm always fucking. I'm
always
Danny Malone.
Ellipses. Fucking frustrated
yeah.
by the fact that I'm 2 years ahead of any product that I'm then putting out, you
okay.
know? Well, in a way, like, I finished recording Speed Dreamer. I think 2 years ago, or coming up on 2 years ago. And same with Balloons. When I put out Balloons, I had finished the actual tracking of Balloons 2 years previous.
Right.
And at this point, when I release the next album, it'll be years after I've written the songs and years after I've begun the recording process. But with this album, I'm finally okay with that. Like,
okay.
I'm like going to take my time, and I started recording pretty much right away after Speed Dreamer was done, and so I know I have all this time to not fret over being like, oh, I have to finish this product and get it out as soon as possible. I'm like realized at this point, and after working this long in the business, that shit just takes a long time.
It does.
And you don't need to worry about it. It's not going to make or break your fucking life if it doesn't come out in the next 2 months or
yeah.
whatever, you know?
And the other thing, too, is that things, like the story of those guys' funding going by the wayside is way more the norm story than like...
Oh, yeah.
They got all their funding. They gave all my thing. And my guy got paid everything that he deserved.
Right,
you know
right.
I mean? And then I was a successful album.
It's the same story. It's like, it's just totally analogous to an artist trying to make it. You know, it's like
yeah.
a label tries to get started and they try to find an artist. And then they do everything they can. And then they run out of money. And then just nothing has hit that they've tried to hit. And then they fold. And it's just the same story of like an artist trying to get that label deal, and he comes so close, and then it falls through, and then the next offer for a label is 6 years later or something. I don't know. It's everyone has good intentions in the start, you know,
right.
and I think, gosh, it almost takes somebody with a sort of shark-like position ready to step on some faces to make it to the top.
Yeah, that's why it takes a guy like us to partner with somebody
right
who's a ruthless guy on our side
right And I don't know if it's necessary for people to be like that, ruthless, but it is definitely like the case a lot of the times when that I've seen. But then again, there's people who just simply have the funds, or like Black Frets just seems like something I've never seen before, because they've put together something where it's not even government funded or in government helping.
No, like that's the Canada other cool thing. It's actually private.
It's private.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a private, like, nonprofit thing that they've set up.
It's fan funded.
Yeah, it's fan funded. People just buying in to be committee members and then just straight up giving that money to artists. And there's no pretense about it. They're not trying to make it to anything. They've already made it just by becoming what they are. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
They're just giving out grants, and that's all they were trying to do, and there you go.
Right. What are you thinking about doing with your grant? Are you using it towards this record, or some touring, or some...
I'll split it up between just day-to-day life and helping with the next record by buying some cool gear or whatever.
So you're recording this record again on your... You're not doing it on 4-track, though, this time. Are you?
No.
Okay.
Not on 4-track. But I actually, like you said, I like to... I'll throw things down on 4-track and then fly it into Pro Tools.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So I am just doing it alone, though. Like, I don't have a producer at all. It's just me alone at my house recording. I did have the help of an engineer for a little bit, but for the next year... It could be 2 years. It'd just be me alone at my place just recording, which is, I think, always how I've made the best stuff, just by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting weird in the middle of the night, you know. Like, I can't sleep, just like hadn't slept in 3 days, all, you know, weirded out and whatever. And then I record something that, I don't know, all my recordings that have been, my favorite stuff has been just me recording alone.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
And I think also that's the stuff that, like my 4-track stuff. You know this guy here named Mark Youngersmith?
Uh-uh.
He's a guitar guy.
Uh-uh. Have you released your 4-track stuff? Like,
I've released some of it.
Like, officially released. Okay, cool.
I mean, not officially released it. I was broke, and I had a CD burner, so I burned a bunch of CDs and drew on the cover. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's not releasing.
Yeah.
I like...
Well,
I would
say
releasing it is more like you have a CD release show.
Right.
It has actual art to it, and then
I release stuff I've done all on my own, like on my other machine.
Yeah, but I think it's totally a cool way of even a more personal way of doing it is to just make stuff and then hand it out, and then and then a year later, 2 years later, you hear that like all these people have it's gone viral or something.
Yeah. Or you hear like, oh, my band ended up getting like this thing. And I was like, wow, that was the impetus. So it wasn't like my wife would say, you know, did you really spend all day fucking making that weird fucking song?
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's weird. I made this a covers album that I just did on GarageBand. It was the first time I even found out what GarageBand was on my laptop. For some reason, I don't know why. I'd never even opened the program to see what it was. My friend opened it and showed me that, like, oh, you just press record, and, you know, this is your input. You even have a built-in microphone, you know?
Yeah.
So I made an entire 10-song album where it was two original songs that end up being on Balloons. And
what covers did you do?
And then 8 cover songs. I did... Well, just to finish that thought, is that I just burned CDs, and then at a show, I was like, I just gave them out for free. I gave out like 100 CDs that I had burned. I was just like, thanks for coming to my show. Here's a special treat. Here's 100 CDs. And come 2-3 years later, I'm still to this day am getting messages, people saying that they love, that's like the favorite album.
Oh, you send me some stuff. What songs did you hear?
So I did something Prairie League.
Pure Prairie League?
Yeah, Pure Prairie League. Amy.
Yeah, wow. I got that on vinyl.
I did Faith by George Michael. Is that it?
Yes.
George Michael.
I know that song very well. I sing it every night with Skyrocket. That's so weird.
So I think I have an awesome, I think my version of it is really cool. There's my own first and only harmonica solo that I've ever recorded, which it was my first solo, and I didn't even know how to play harmonica, but it's the best, it's the most rocking harmonica track I've ever done. I don't know how I did it, but let's see what else. I did a Joanna Newsom song. You know,
I know that name.
She plays harp and sings, and she's got this weird, like, elf-like voice. I think she's an elf. I think she's actually an elf, but no one will prove that. But I did Tiny Dancer.
Oh, yeah.
I did one in
the mid-2000s.
You did a covers album?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to do one soon again because they're fun. And
I want to hear yours. You send me some songs.
Okay.
And I'll send you some songs.
All right. Here, I'll just, before I forget, I'll just do it right now.
Oh, good.
Oh, and then I can tell you the songs I did. Boom.
Is there anything that I'm missing with you? I like talking to you, man.
I
liked when we used to have those shows on Sundays at the Hotel Vegas.
Yeah, we did the residency the whole time together, yeah?
I think so, yeah.
Four shows, like, I guess, or five shows.
The whole residency. That whole month?
Dude.
It was a month of Sundays.
It was a month of Sundays. This is a foggy kind of time in my life. What about you? You remember that?
Oh, yeah. No, I remember it well.
Okay. So what's your email?
JohnnyGowdy@gmail.com.
And you spell your name J-O-H-N-I?
Nope. J-O-H-N-N-Y. G-O-U-D-I-E.
Okay. Someone sent me the wrong spelling of your name. And it was
that person said, will never work in this town again.
Never. They are done. You hear that? Nameless person. Yeah, you know who you are.
Yeah.
Check your text messages, fool. But they said IE, which is so like, it's like they knew. I mean, like, that's too. Why would anyone guess IE?
I think it's because my last name has IE, so it makes people think that.
Okay, so they switched it. They had Y on the Gowdy.
Oh, yeah. That's a switcheroo. I call that switcheroo.
That's the old Y on the Gowdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the switcheroo.
You put the Y on the Gowdy. And
they don't know.
No,
yeah.
They don't know.
When you've loved and lost like Johnny with a Y, then you'd know. But when these kids today, they don't know.
They don't know.
They don't know their Ys from their IEs.
They don't. I.E., they're clueless.
I.E., they're clueless. So, hey, people can find you on the internet. You've got a Twitter. You've got a Facebook. You've got a Bandcamp.
Yeah.
But your website, DannyMalone.com, is...
That's one thing I'll pay for with the Black Friday.
Okay.
I've been
through. Yeah, we got to...
$300.
Tell those Black Friday guys.
It costs $300.
But so, DannyMalone.com, maybe by the time this is up, we'll be back up and running.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll get some... I could get my mom to loan me money. I don't know. I'll figure that out. My website will be up pretty soon.
I think people should send you money because you're a fantastic artist, and I'm glad there's a fund of patronage for somebody to get money.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
Black Friday. All the way, all day.
Yeah. Where do you have any shows coming up in the next couple of months?
I have a Black Fret, the Art City Austin show on Saturday. But that's going to be...
That will have passed.
So this last Saturday, there was the Art City Austin show. And then what do I got? I got a show at Windflow. You know this place?
Yes.
I've got a show on July 2nd at Windflow.
That's fantastic.
Which is a great... venue, and they have like a whole...
I've not been to one of the dinner shows, but I have been there to see some stuff at South By, and it's a great place. Our friend Christina
is Christina Shipley. Yeah. And it's dinner and drinks, and it's a whole... do they sell tickets? And then it's like it's like $25 tickets or whatever, but then that's the whole night. That's food, drinks, and the show.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's always a really good atmosphere, and 50 people or 60 people sells it out. And so it's
and
really
they
intimate.
And
the sound is great. And so they have to listen because it's so small in the first place. But the mood of it, it's always at the end of the show. I look out and all the couples are just like hanging on each other
kissing.
And just like at the beginning of it, it's probably a lot of first dates and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, right, right. Oh, I'll take you to this thing. It's like a special underground right. dinner club.
Or you're like, yo, you yeah, like yeah. this guy too? Well, yeah. let's go to the show. And then they go, and that by the end of it, they're like definitely going to sleep with each other that night. You know what I'm saying?
What happens when the girl decides that she would rather sleep with the Danny Malone than maybe the date that she, brought her to the thing?
She wishes. She would. That's what I say. That's what I say. I can't hold a conversation. That's what they don't know.
I saw a thing on the internet that Nerdist had put up a commercial for the new Friends and why Friends wouldn't work in this day and age. And that like they had the song and it was pretty funny. It's all electronic. But when they get to the part of the show, it's just 30 seconds of people all looking at their phones in a coffee shop. It's pretty funny.
Wait, that's the new show?
That's why Friends wouldn't work now.
That's funny.
Because they wouldn't be talking. Just...
That is the case.
Well, people can get out there and find you. You got albums on iTunes. You got them on Spotify.
Yes.
You got them on Bandcamp.
Yes.
I bet you have a SoundCloud.
Yes.
Two.
Yes. Just Google. That's
just
what
Google
I say.
Danny Malone.
Google me.
That's what I always say too, because people are like, "Well, what's the website?" I'm like, "Just Google my name
me.
And podcast."
Like, there's not another Johnny Gowdy out there that's winning the race.
No.
Yeah.
I do have a dad and a brother named Johnny Gowdy.
Really?
Yeah.
But they're not on top of Google.
No.
No.
No. They're
Google you.
They're not as Googleable as me.
Mm.
Thank you so much for coming by. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I don't know. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I like you.
Thank you. I like you too. And do you live across the thing? We should go walk around together. Do you walk around?
Yeah, I walk around. You want to hang out?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Like, not after this because I got to go.
Oh.
But.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe in the next couple of days.
I'm like totally busy after this. So.
Yeah, not now.
But yeah, we got each other's phone numbers now.
Yeah, we do.
So let's hang out.
Okay. Danny Malone. What a great conversation, man. I love talking to that dude. And his album, Speed Dreamer, it is unbelievable. I made on 4-track cassette, which is my favorite medium, and one Shure 58 microphone. That's it. You were just listening to it. We'll hear another song from it in just a minute. You can find that album on Bandcamp, on iTunes, and on Spotify. You can also find Danny Malone on Facebook and Twitter. He's an artist worth checking out. He's got a lot of albums, Balloons, Verses, Cuddlebug, While We're Still Here. Albums out there on the internet that you can check out and get into Danny, man. He's a great artist. And he's definitely worth checking out. All right, so while you're out there on the internet looking up Danny Malone stuff, don't forget that you can like our Facebook page. You will see photos of gentlemen like Danny Malone and myself and updates from different artists. You'll get a TBT, an old episode that I put up every Thursday on the page. Right now, it is George Reef. That's what I put up yesterday. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find us on the app Stitcher, which streams podcasts over 5,000 shows. Check it out. If you listen to stuff on your phone, it's worth listening to. All right, let's hear some more music from Danny Malone and his album Speed Dreamer. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you all have a great weekend. Let's get down.